Nailed it.
All right. Okay, here we go. So how do I follow that up? So good morning, everybody. Once again, we're going to keep saying this. Happy Father's Day to all of you. We are continuing today in our Journey to Higher Ground series. And so I'm going to go ahead and start off by reading this. I don't know if it's because I'm a really good Christian or a really bad Christian, but the Sermon on the Mount is just falling out of my Bible here. So here we go. I'm picking up today in Matthew 33. And it says, you have also heard that our ancestors were told, you must not break your vows. You must carry out the vows you make to the Lord. But I say to you, do not make vows. Do not say by heaven, because heaven is God's throne. Do not say by earth, because the earth is his footstool. And do not say by Jerusalem, for Jerusalem is the city of the great king. Do not even say by my head, for you can't turn one hair white or black. Take it easy, Jesus. Okay. Just say simple, yes, I will, or no, I won't. So anything beyond this is from the evil one. Continuing on. So we have, you have heard the law say that punishment must match the injury. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer them the other cheek also. If you are sued in court for your shirt and your shirt is taken from you, give your coat too. If a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. Give to those who ask and do not turn away from those who want to borrow. You have heard that the law says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. In that way, you will be acting as true children of your Father in heaven. For he gives sunlight to both the evil and the good, and he sends the rain to the just and the unjust alike. If you love only those who love you, what reward is there for you in that? Even the corrupt tax collectors do that much. If you are kind only to your friends, how are you different from anyone else? Even pagans do that. But you are to be perfect even as your Father in heaven is perfect. All right. So that's our text for today. And as I lead into this, there's going to be a lot of kind of setup and staging before we really dig into that part of the text. First off is the confession time. So I, by all means, should have been really, really studying that text that I just read to you coming into this. But these last couple months have been kind of funky for us. My wife and I had a little bit of a, well, not a little bit, we had a loss. And we've been mourning and kind of going through that stuff. And in my experience, there are two kinds of people in this world. There are people who, when they're sad, they listen to sad music to kind of make them just fall into that and comfort by the sad. Or there's people who listen to the happy music and cheer themselves up when they're sad. I'm a sad music person. So what I've been reading is this. You can go to the next slide. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again, and there is nothing new under the sun. Meaningless, meaningless. So there's our cheery set off for today. Woo-woo, you like that. I have this thing since I was younger. I keep coming back to this book of Ecclesiastes. I actually, this is a kind of funny story. I wasn't sure if I was going to throw this in, but not that I ever dated anybody before my wife, but if I did, okay. There was a story where I was starting to date this girl, and her mom wanted to meet me. We went to the same church, and so we were going to have lunch. I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to go over to her house for lunch. And we sit down for lunch, and then she lets everybody else leave and just has me sitting there with her. And I was like, okay. And so then she begins to like do like a harsh like interview. And the reason this story even stuck with me, because I was nervous like I am right now. And she asked, so what's your favorite book of the Bible? And I just spouted off, Ecclesiastes. And she goes, really? Why? And in the worst answer ever given to a mom, I said, I don't know. It's pretty punk rock, isn't it? And then I had to, like, no laugh at all. You guys, thank you for that response. I did not get that from her. And so then it got really tense, and I had to kind of go in and explain. But back then in my late teens, early 20s, and even now, like, this has been something that I return to in times. And I think one of the reasons is because it's, I don't know, how many of you have read all the way through Ecclesiastes? I'm sure plenty of you have, yeah. It's something I still don't understand, and I'm always going to wrestle with it. So as I said to my confession to you, as I should have been digging in to this on Matthew and reading all the books that our teaching team has right now, I've been sitting here wrestling through this text again. But don't be scared. I've found as I was going through this, and I hopefully it kind of comes out talking with you guys, that this wasn't a fruitless endeavor, and this is why. So I believe that the Bible or God's story is an ongoing through story. And I believe that because of that truth, we can take some of the weirdest texts from the old stuff and the new stuff, and if we are looking through that lens, trying to see, especially the lens of Jesus, but all in all, we can kind of start to unpack that story, and the Bible can read into itself. So I'm hoping, going along with that, that we can look at these texts that I've been kind of wrestling with and look at what Jesus is saying here in Matthew and see how that story is kind of coming together, overlapping, and telling us something that we can take away from that. So moving right along to this, like I said, there's going to be a lot of setting the stage. So going into the next slide. So here's the broad story that I believe is being told, and most of you have heard it in this way. But we have creation, or starting with a garden or kingdom, as I'm going to use just to kind of fit into this today a little more. But with that, in the beginning of the story, we see, as we've talked about, I'm repeating over and over, shalom, 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 shalom. But life is flourishing, it's abundant, it's good and complete in that definition of shalom. It's complete. From there, we have, as we know in chapter 3 of Genesis, the fall. And in that, shalom is broken, and we have entering in the sin or empire, death, and as this term will come up through my teaching today, the curse kind of enters in. Now, I know she gets irritated when I say this, but as Jenny said last week, sin is it's a path counter to something. Sin is, I love that she used this word, a trajectory that's leading us away from harmony with God and creation. So as this comes into the story, we have things going in a different direction now. Now that's the easy setup of the broad story, but now we move into where our text meets that story. So, the coffee, I always try and wake myself up here and then we just start charging through it. I love it. Keep it going. Okay. The good news, as we all know, we say the gospel or whatever, but I'm really grateful that here at Liminal, we're leaning into this kingdom side of what that good news is. But the good news is the return of the kingdom. And so we see that this good news is announced in the incarnation and through Jesus' ministry. So this is where we find... Now, here we are looking back at this. So in hindsight, we know that that will be past this sermon right here, that will come into the inauguration with the cross and the resurrection, and then it will be consummated in Christ's return. Now, inauguration, consummation, you can kind of interchange those words however you seek to define them, but it is the now and not yet, and it is coming together. So that's where we are in this text. Now, this has been said a couple times throughout this series, so I want to really, really hit on this. The Sermon on the Mount, we know from all this that it's actually a collection of sermons. I still want to think of it as just like the most perfect sermon ever taught because Jesus is amazing. That's awesome. He just knocked it out of the park right there. But we see this, and putting it in that context of the greater story, that this teaching through these chapters in Matthew here is a description of what life in that returning kingdom looks like. So we have to put that in the context of what's happening at this place and time. So this is happening. This is set in the present occupation of sin and empire. Now, the same occupation exists as the teacher is speaking in Ecclesiastes, right? So I see overlapping these texts here. I see Jesus, as we've said so many times, turning the diamond and shedding a little light into the wisdom that I was reading in Ecclesiastes, because that wisdom, even the meaningless, the eat, drink, and be merry as best you can, because this is just the time you have on life, I don't believe that to be unwise, but I do believe it to be slightly ignorant, because at the time, what the teacher is witnessing is shrouded in the curse. So what we are doing now, as I kind of look into this in light of Jesus' words, we're able to turn that diamond, like I said, and look into what those words might mean if you're looking through the lens of somebody who knows a little more. So here comes the turn. You guys know I'm a sucker for all the music references, so that's why I brought this up. Pete Seeger wrote Turn. The Birds made it super popular, but we all know that the real writer is, well, the teacher, or King Solomon, however you want to say that. So this song, Turn, I'm going to try and read it without singing it, but this is taken almost directly from the text in, I believe, chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes, but the words go, to everything, turn, there is a season, turn, and a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep. To everything, turn, there is a season, turn. A time for purpose, everything under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together. There's a time to love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace, a time that you may embrace, and a time that you may refrain from embracing. A time to gain, a time to lose, a time to rend, a time to sow, a time to love, a time for hate. And then Pete Seeger couldn't just leave it where the teacher left it, and he had to add some hope, but he says, a time for peace, I swear it's not too late. So that's truth. When we look out in the world and we see what's going on, everything is happening in its time. But what I see as Jesus goes on to explain this stuff, you know, let me back up. Let's back up real quick on this. The teacher also says in Ecclesiastes, as no one has the power over the wind to contain it, so no one has the power over their time of death, and as no one is just discharged in time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. All right, do we know anybody from this wonderful collection of books that we've read, do we know anybody that has a power over the wind? Because if you were Peter, you would know the answer to that. So, yeah, right? So we have these guys on a boat in a story in here where they're just like, who is this guy? He controls the wind and the seas. The power a power over the time of death. That same person, Jesus, I say, he says, no one takes my life from me, but I lay it down. There seems to be something in Jesus that way back when Solomon, we'll just say Solomon, way back when Solomon is writing this part of Ecclesiastes or this wisdom literature, he hasn't seen it yet. And so Jesus is that person, and he has this different insight. So what my little verses at the very beginning, verses imagine, I'm going to go a different route with this, where I think Jesus is calling us to open up our imagination. Now, don't stone me for saying this, but I'm going to go ahead and read the words to a song written by John Lennon. And it says, imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. That first verse usually gets Christians a little uncomfortable, but We're going to keep moving on because I think there's something to that. Imagine that there's no countries, it isn't hard to do, nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you will join us and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions, I wonder if you can, no need for greed or hunger, a brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you will join us and the world will live as one. I know I'm kind of bouncing back and forth now, but can you imagine, as we look out at this world now, I mean, we saw so much yesterday. I don't know if any of you were at any of the demonstrations, but we look out at this world and there's so much going on. It's so much easier for me to see it through that lens of the teacher, of like, you know what, there's times to fight, there's times for bad things are happening, all this stuff. But can I look at it through the lens with hope of imagining, like, you know, there is a time that this is going to come together. The teacher also explains that, well, I'll get into this a little bit, but tying into the imagined side, he also explains that daydreams are useless. And I think that's really funny because what I'm trying to get you guys to do today is totally dream. So let's see how that goes. So let's jump ahead into our text then. I kind of want to look at this contrast. And so the easy framework that I'm going to put out is we're looking at a world that's shrouded in curse. We're looking at a world that we can, with our eyes, witness bad things happening, all this kind of stuff. But then there's this other way that's being explained to us of like, what does this new kingdom look like? If this is the good news, what does it look like? So Ecclesiastes 5:1-7. I'm sorry I'm reading so much scripture today, but this is, I don't need to apologize. Let's go. As you enter the house of God, keep your ears open and your mouth shut. It is evil to make mindless offerings to God. Don't make rash promises and don't be hasty in bringing matters before God. After all, God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. Too much activity gives you restless dreams. Too many words make you a fool. When you make a promise to God, don't delay in following through, and God takes no pleasure in fools. Keep all your promises you make to him. It is better to say nothing than to make a promise. He goes on to say, talk is cheap like daydreams and other useless activities. Fear God instead. Sounds very similar to what Jesus said at the beginning of our text when he says, don't break your vows. Don't say by heaven because heaven is God's throne. Don't say by earth because earth is his footstool. Don't say by Jerusalem because that is the city of the great king. Just let your yes be yes and your no, no. Anything beyond this is from the evil one. It sounds very similar, right? But as I read through this in the context of the story, I see two separate things. I see in a cursed world, dreams are useless, like I said. God is God, and all we can do is our best to not make him angry. Jesus is saying something different, though, if we want to go to that next slide. In the new kingdom, we will not need to leverage for power or position or approval. Look at this in the sense, today's Father's Day. Jesus is speaking as the Son. He also says in other scripture that the Father knows how to give good gifts. He's not going to give you a snake when you ask for a Happy Meal. That's exactly what it says in there. So looking at it through that lens, it's a totally different shift on the same practice. Yeah, don't throw out a bunch of words on stuff. Don't do it because you don't want to anger God, or don't do it because you don't need to. You can simply be. You are a child of God, and you can simply be. He knows what's good for you, and he loves you. Moving on, Ecclesiastes in chapter 8, he says, in this life, good people are often treated as though they were wicked, and wicked people are often treated as though they were good. This is so meaningless. So I recommend having fun. Go for it, teacher. Because there is nothing better for the people to do in this world than to eat, drink, and enjoy life. That way they will experience some happiness along with all the hard work God gives them under the sun. This is directly just dripping with that curse. Because in a cursed world, hurt people, and bad things happen to good people. And again, all you can do is just try and enjoy it. And in this, I like that he says, in the time that, experience some happiness along the way with all the hard work that God gives them under the sun. Work takes a different meaning under the curse. Work, as we know, we're going to struggle with this land, and it's going to just fight against us, and we're going to hit this wearisome spot. Jesus takes a different approach, I think, counter to this, when he speaks about an eye for an eye in this whole thing. He says, you have heard the law says, you've heard the law says, an eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, but I say, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. If you're sued in court for your shirt, give your cloak as well. If the soldier makes you walk 1 mile, offer the second mile. Now, I don't know if you've all kind of unpacked this before. I imagine many of you have. But this is not telling us to just sit here and take it. But I think we've discussed this a couple times up here. This is opening up a third way. This is opening up a way that we are able to keep intact our dignity and our identity as image bearers of God as we face the difficulties that will happen. This is counter to just giving in the way I would say the teacher kind of does. He says bad things are going to happen to good people, and all you can do is just deal with it. Jesus says, as opposed to that, in the new kingdom, we will uphold the dignity and the identity of all image bearers, including ourselves. If we are living out a way that we see in this kingdom that I imagine, I'm not going to resist and fight back in a way that diminishes my identity as an image bearer. But I'm also recognizing that oppression, violence, and hate is also damaging and diminishing and decreasing the dignity of another image bearer, the one who is doing the aggression, who is doing the violence. So what I will do, trying to be creative as Jesus lays out, is I'm going to try to live in a way that calls that person, calls that aggressor in out of that damaging behavior, and still raises me up into a place that maintains that identity and asserts my own, agency. Asserts my own agency. In doing that, I mean, so just quick unpacking on that, I know I'm going to race through this, but the turn the other cheek, is set out specifically to show that when somebody slaps you backhand with the left hand, or, you know, I'm going to get the hands all mixed up. But there is one way to be slapped that stands up and shows respect, and there's another way that shows you being demeaned like a dog. Jesus asserts that to turn the other cheek, so demand that you are going to see me as an equal and you're going to treat me as a fellow image bearer, somebody deserving of dignity and respect. Same thing goes on with the shirt and the cloak. It's a way of not just shaming, but bringing, asserting that identity. I'm not coming up with a better way to say that, but I'm upholding that. So in doing this, like I said, we are having to be creative, but in the new kingdom, we know that all image bearers, every human being, not just my enemy and myself, that stuff is going to be done away with. We are all going to be upheld as loved and seen and living in that shalom harmony with our Creator. So we're trying to establish a world now through our own actions, living it out through our imagination, that we're establishing that world where we are upholding that. Okay, that's a lot of blabbering on. We're going to move on. Here we go. So in Ecclesiastes, we have generations come and generations go. The earth never changes. The sun rises, the sun sets. It hurries around to rise again. The wind blows to the south, and then it turns to the north. Around and around it goes, blowing in circles. Rivers run to the sea, but the sea is never full. The water returns again. Everything is wearisome beyond description. No matter how much we see, we are never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are never content. The teacher looks out and watches the world, and he's saying, everything is happening in cycles. There it goes up again, and it goes down again. Everything's moving. It's never filled. It's never complete. It's never content. I believe this to be in opposition to what Jesus speaks when he says, the part that I didn't put in my notes, but I'll find it on this page. When he says, you've heard it said that you love your neighbor, but you hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. In that way, you will be acting as true children of your Father in heaven. For he gives sunlight to both the evil and the good. He sends rain on both the just and the unjust. Only those who love you, if you love only those who love you, what reward is there for that? Even the corrupt tax collectors do that much. If you're kind only to friends, how are you different from the pagans? But you are to be perfect as your Father is perfect. All right, so there I know that sounds like a little bit of a stretch, but did you hear that little part in there? He sends sunlight on the just and the unjust. He sends the rain to the good and the bad, all that stuff. We can look at this through a perspective of, man, all this stuff keeps happening again. Here we go through this cycle again. Bad things are happening to good people. The good people do everything they can, and they still die like everybody else. We can look at it through that lens, and it's very true to some extent. We can hold God in that authority position and just say, you know what, all of this is wearisome. This life sucks. We can stay in this sad music version of all that. But Jesus looks at this and he says, you see the sun rising over the good and the bad? You see the rain falling on the righteous and the wicked? That's because God loves you. He loves his creation. In the new kingdom, we will love completely because we are loved completely. In the new kingdom, as opposed to this cursed, wearisome world that we watch, in the new kingdom, we will see everybody on an even playing field saying, no matter what you do to me or how we hurt each other, you are a child of God, you are an image bearer of God, and I will love you completely is the way he calls me to say that. Now, the word that I read in the New Living Translation is, be perfect as your Father is perfect. I'm going to kind of tie into this. It's not a real sermon if you don't start explaining the Greek. But that word there in this text is, I'm going to say it incorrectly, but it's teleos. Now, there are three words that I've been so fascinated with lately. And there's actually this group that, as I was kind of researching, out of Fresno Pacific School, there's a group that they have out there that is the CPAC, not a bad one, but the CPAC. So it's the Center for Peacemaking and Conflict Studies. And in a really interesting little blurb that I read as I was digging into this word, teleos, they put these three words together, and there's this little article about it, and he's saying, teleos, what teleos means is complete. Teleos would be like a construction term or something, like something that's not broken. Everything is put together and it's complete. Now, through the Greek and the Hebrew, we know from a lot of, I'm beating a dead horse on this, but shalom also means with lacking nothing. Shalom, as we've said, is that abundance, that everything comes together, it's totally complete. We are seen completely by God. We are loved completely by God. And then shalom, through much of the New Testament, gets put in with the Greek word eirene, which I probably said incorrectly, but that usually gets translated into our Bibles as peace, right? Now, just like I'm trying to synthesize this text from Ecclesiastes with this text from Matthew, over time, as we've had these words kind of used through the New Testament, these words have somewhat kind of synthesized. So because the Greek word eirene means more specifically a time of peace amongst a long time of war. It's sort of a blip, a gap in that long ongoing war. Well, because that word has been used for shalom so often, of course, the deeper meanings of shalom has kind of seeped into that. So now that word has a little more of that rounded out definition to it. Now, I believe the same thing has happened with this teleos word, this complete. We see the ideas, the completeness of God's love. We see the totality of, like I said before, flourishing life, lacking nothing, all that stuff. That is kind of put into this word, teleos. So when it's saying be perfect as your Father is perfect, it's not just saying lacking nothing or not broken. What it's saying is this deep, rich thing in how we see the world, how we love the world. I believe what this is saying is this is breathing a new light into how we view the world through the lens of our faith that kingdom is being rebuilt. So I believe every word that Jesus is saying through here is not just about getting slapped in the cheek and giving people your shirt and, you know, just not talking too much. But I believe what he's saying is like, hey, there is a new world that's coming about. And look at this. Look at the sun rising. Look at how God treats these people. I want you to live like that, because in the new world, that's what it's going to look like. In the new kingdom. So in that greater story, I'm sure many of you who are good churchgoers have heard it broken down into the creation, fall. We have now, through Jesus' death on the cross and resurrection, we have that redemption. And then we have, why can't I think of the word, Wayne? Thank you. Amen. Restoration. The coffee didn't hit right on that one. Creation, fall, redemption, restoration. So if we are going to live into the now and not yet of that kingdom, we are saying now, as we look out in the world and observe it, I'm not going to just see this through the obvious lens that the teacher sees it through it of like, man, this is hard, and I'm just going to do my best. I know that God's in control, but I'm just going to do my best not to piss him off and just try and live right and enjoy this life while I can. No, I can look at that world and see it through the lens of, hey, look over there. Do you see that? Oh, look at that happening. Look at how that person reacted. I see that's little bits of that new kingdom. He's doing it. He's doing it. And that brings us to, I want to end on this note of joy. We're going to move out of the sad music. We're going to move into the happy song. So there's no better way to talk about joy than to quote G.K. Chesterton. So let's go. Because children have abounding vitality, because they are in spirit fierce and free, therefore they want things repeated and unchanged. They always say, do it again. And the grown-up person does it again until he's nearly dead. For grown-up people are not strong enough to exult in monotony, but perhaps God is strong enough to exult in monotony. It is possible that God says every morning, do it again to the sun, and every evening, do it again to the moon. It may not be automatic necessity that makes all the daisies alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, but has never gotten tired of making them. It may be that he has the eternal appetite for infancy, for we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we. So as we leave on this idea of imagination, that's my homework to myself. Okay, you guys can jump on it if you want to, but as I try and live out this third way of what the kingdom's going to look like, instead of dwelling on the harshness of the world that's happening around me, maybe I can look at this calling into this new open imagination. And being that it's Father's Day, maybe I can look at all this stuff and say, hey, God, you did that. You did that back then. And I'm seeing little evidence that you did that at the beginning. Do it again. Do it again. You guys think we can do that? We'll see. Okay. All right. Thank you guys so much. And the band can come back up, and I'm out of your way. Hi, baby.